Blog Talk Radio.
I think we start off where we're still tipping into our study of symbolism, but we're going to break this up with, of course, some good music, and I think you're going to like the work that we've chosen for you today. It's a good time of year as we're starting off to be reflective, isn't it? It's not that we shouldn't be every single day. I think I've just done a short paper on self-examination and Freemasonry. Freemasonry seems to be more a matter of restraint. You know, you feel it. It can be liberating in the same instance, but there's this feeling that goes with it of the enormity of the ideas that are contained within the framework of Freemasonry. It's just a wonderful experience. But just as life is bittersweet, we are mindful of tempering our expectations a little bit, at least to realize that the difference between the reality of our existence and that time, that seems so plodding to get anything done, when it seems so simple in our minds, has always been part of human experience. But remember too that Freemasonry has an edginess to it as well, because it's offering something that's really difficult to define and categorize for most people. It is, when we're talking about Freemasonry as ideas, that's unsettling. We want hard doctrines so that we can, it's easier to criticize them. And, you know, we rise above it all time and time again. Here, speaking about rising above it all, for an organization that should never exist, like, oh my goodness, think about it, hundreds of years for a fraternity. And no, there's no need now to be selfish about this. There are women Freemasons, they're quite content. There's none of this, you know, pithiness about joining. Get over that stuff. They're quite content. As well as they should be. They don't need our permission to do anything. And they haven't. They found that bond, the Masonic bond, the bond of friendship, the badge of innocence, yeah? So we should they be denied that is just a ridiculous kind of a question to ask. Time to be reflective and enjoy. So I hope you'll... you'll like what we've put together for you today. This is perhaps one of the most charming bits of music that I've found in jazz. It's again Chet Baker. And yes, you can punish me for turning to Baker too often, but I've become quite, you know, I'm trying to find something, I don't know, better and worse is. Maybe I'll put on some Dizzy Gillespie next week instead of him. But this is Tenderly by Chet Baker. Get used to something like that, couldn't you? Couldn't you? Chip Baker. Rest in peace, Chip. A narrative for you today. So I referred to it as a thoughtful narrative with a question mark. Thoughtful narrative? Conflict is what it is. Whether we moralize or not, progress will always be possible when people are able to conquer their sense of nihilism. In some ways, it is a noble, necessary expression of our humanity, like trying to prevent suicide. We can be soothing to survivors, as we should, but each instance is a complex story, hard to formulate into a commodity we can define well enough to study, whether furtive or not. Masonry emphasizes humanist values while knowing well they're as men whose muscularity is their vulnerability, anger, and fear. Masonry is hardly uniform. No utopian promise here, no full piety, far from it. Masonry is a daily practice aimed at effort, diligence, and mastery of the task. We look, talk, and act as if we are aware. We cannot reach that state unless we accept fallibility. Imagine all that and an atmosphere of acceptance. There is a place for validation if that is needed. In the midst of what can only be described as a vibrant atmosphere, is a place for contemplation in coexistence with very little chafing. The more like-minded members in a lodge, the more compatible our expectations and outcomes. It is consistency that we provide in a dynamic market community. Outdated? Not as long as there is a desire and need. Ethics and values are, after all, stabilizers, as is brotherhood. My goodness. If there was a contest for, and we were going to elect, we're going to decide on, it's a plebiscite, we're going to decide on our a new national anthem for all our nations, my vote would be for this song. Instead of roaring away, sit back, you fill your glass with something comfortable, you surround yourself with grand companions and feast on life. Just absolutely feast on life. There we go. I don't know if we'd as much stand up, puff out our chests, and sit down and relax. Take it all in. All of it. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Bill Evans. Guillermo Apollinari. What can I say? This is our poet for today. Here, the reason why I've not heard about this person, I'm a bit of a Philistine, I think. Troglodyte, call me troglodyte. This is just a little snippet. This is a French poet, Apollinari. And he was an art critic and a novelist and a short story writer and a playwright. And he's considered one of the foremost poets of the early 20th century, as well as one of the most impassioned defenders of Cubism and a forefather of Surrealism. He is credited with coining the term Cubism in 1911 to describe the emerging art music, and the term Surrealism in 1917 to describe the works of Eric Satie. Now, if you have a chance or you have some equipment around you, you might want to do yourself a favor and be alone for a while with Eric Satie's work. The term Orphism is also his. It's a term. An offshoot of Cubism that focused more on pure abstraction and bright colors. And it was influenced, just like you and I, it was influenced by theoretical writings of Paul Schoenaerts and Charles Henry and the dye chemist Eugene Chevreul. This is an influential reflection, an original thinker. He died at age 38 in 1918 in Paris, France. Janin, as did so many, died of the Spanish flu pandemic. So it takes your breath away, no pun intended. Here, this is a poem that he did that I just fell in love with. It's called Le Point Mirabeau. And it's a poem set to... He talks about lost love by likening it to the flow of the River Seine under the Mirabeau Bridge in Paris. So you're sitting there just watching. If you've ever done that, you find it's almost hypnotic. It's almost... what? Hallucinogenic? He did this, and this poem was out before the First World War in 1912, and it was released in 1913 in a collection called Alcools. But today, you'll see a plaque containing the first part of the poem on the wall of the Le Point Mirabeau in Paris, overlooking the Louis Barrault Quay. So, lost love in a river, you say? Here, check this out. Under the Mirabeau Bridge, where flows the Seine, must I recall our loves, recall how then, after each sorrow, joy came back again. Let night come on, bells, and the day. The days go by me, still I say. Hands joined and face to face, let's stay just so. While underneath the bridge of our arms shall go weary of endless looks, the rivers flow. Let night come on, bells, and day, the day. The days go by me, still I stay. All love goes by as water to the sea. All love goes by. How slow love's life seems to me. How violent the hope of love can be. Let night come on, bells, and the day. The days go by me, still I stay. The days, the weeks pass by beyond our ken, neither time passed, nor love comes back again. Under the Mirabeau Bridge, there flows the Seine. Let night come on, bells, and the day. The days go by me, still I stay. I'm gonna go to bed. Turrentine, of course. Of course. Who else could it be? Family. Nice music. Nice, Tim. That's from his full album called Sugar. Beautiful stuff. We're moving through the messages that we've collected over the years. Not enough that we want to have a sit down with fellows and have a purpose to examining philosophies and comparative analysis. We hope like anything, it's just brings out the helps us to articulate, gives us meaning, gives us reason. I think you'll agree that critical analysis, critical thinking has not been part of masonry, hasn't been emphasized in masonry for quite some time. Perhaps in a way it's been leaving a piece of forest uncut. Some of the entrepreneurs would feel that it's a wasted commodity. Not that nature is a commodity. We can commodify it, though, and some could make profit from it. But when you don't touch it, you're, in a sense, leaving it for the next generation. It's hard to do that on purpose, though, to actually plan that we're going to leave this tract of land, we're going to leave something pristine on purpose for future generations. It's easier to do it by happenstance. Oh my goodness, we found these hectares that have regrown after being forested. we've found that, that nature has restored itself in some ways, and if left alone, will eventually cleanse. But we can't really do that on purpose. We have to do it by happenstance. Freemasonry is a bit more audacious in that regard because we do things without enforcement or without without discipline, by obligation. And do we achieve that? And sometimes I think we might achieve that in a stronger sense by happenstance. Learn at the start, particularly. Learn. Become comfortable with the outward appearance of Masons and being in the company of Masons. Learn about the difference that rank doesn't necessarily change all personalities, but a lot of them, and then look for the commonality. What seems to happen? Can you tell when a fellow is the bigger person, the most the thoughtful, the generous? It seems to get it. That's thoughtful when he's making his judgments. That's able to start with a smile and end with a warm handshake. Then, when you have that tucked away, that's of course, just borrowing from Pythagorean college. As new students, we were told to be quiet. We were vegetarian. We were told that we were new, we didn't have much to add to the conversation, so it's your time not to be spoken to and not to speak. And oh, that's so dreadful, because it teaches an awareness, if we're smart enough, an awareness of the other senses. What happens to your other senses? What happens to communication when you're not talking? Not chattering away, not nervously filling in the blank, because it's the downbeat. It's expected that you begin to speak when you have something thoughtful to contribute. What a different world from the flow, the stream of chatter around us. Not to be dispassionate. Oh, we'll have somebody tossing a pathetic situation our way. And if we respond to it, it doesn't stop the pathos. In the next moment, the next second, it's ongoing. It's ongoing. Never, because we are billions of us. And these situations are billions. And you and I have limits and fatigue. That's normal and natural if you accept it. You're not unworthy because we make decisions. It doesn't make us unworthy at all. Not at all. It means that in some sense we have limits that we're beginning to respect. If they're avoidant, you'll know them. If you're using these types of statements and ideas as excuses, people around you will know you. Remember, the transparency that we learn in those early days doesn't necessarily come when we start to ask the question for the first time. It's maybe when you're asking the question the third or fourth time. What is it here that I'm to learn? So that there's a necessity, a way of making decisions that isn't callous and thoughtless. That preserves and our sense of balance. And we come to some conclusions that we do what we can. Not in some way to compensate for the misadventure of our family life or childhood, when we're more predominantly influenced by the adults than we are by our own character. Even if you're raised with that sort of cockiness, still because of the tolerance levels of the people around you. You could equally be raised with the back of a hand across your jaw. You know that. Once you learn that, then we sit down and study. And what do we study? Well, it's enough. In the library here at the Masonic Effects, we've accepted the notion that the study of Masonry is really of history, of philosophy, two very, very important areas, history and philosophy and symbolism. Those beautiful marks that convey stories, messages, and themes. And we're taught to look at them in a particular way. We're taught the key to unlock this story. If you're aware enough to listen. If you don't have those keys, it says more about you than the symbols. It says that you're sensing a need, a desire for them. Well, where are you going to find them? You're expecting somebody, Father Time is going to hand you a bag of the keys to the symbols of Freemasonry. There you go. You're a good lad. You don't have to do the work. Remember, we're part of an order that is so unusual that we take merit so cautiously. That one of our stories is about a fellow that was confronted with overwhelming odds by thugs and was beaten down, and eventually, it didn't run, didn't blink, was beaten down because they wanted a word, and they weren't worthy of that word. They hadn't earned it, and they were muscular and demanding. Everything that a good Mason is not. So as we swim out into the crowd of Masonic adventure, remember, not everybody's a student of the craft. There is no enforcement. There's an opportunity. And it is hoped that each and every one of us accepts and embraces that opportunity. So did you and I study symbolism or history? Or philosophy. They're not that daunting. Let our aims do the work. Don't get into your own head about these things. Let the aims of our order that you're a part do the heavy lifting. It's already been done. Especially if you're getting into a collision of thou shalt not, I can't, I won't. Stop. Be quiet. Listen to yourself. The heavy lifting's already been done. You study one enough. You pick the first one as suits your nature. For what it's worth, begin with questions. Oh, that's the devil in detail, isn't it? Ask the question so that your work becomes organized. And often, the solution to the findings of major theses are wrapped up in the question that's being asked. So be patient with yourself. Be patient with the question you're asking. Not to avoid, not to procrastinate, to consider. And it doesn't mean sitting down and navel gazing is going to be the solution. You're not a Sufi, you're not a guru, you're Mason. We tend to subscribe, as many of the Zen masters did, to a discovery through the peripatetic, through doing the work, through the journey. If you feel that you can't go on because you don't have the answers, well then, work a little harder. If you're true to you, yourself and you want those answers, work a little harder. Be more patient with yourself. And if you don't like that, ball your hands into those tight little fists and have a temper tantrum. And then where has it gotten you? Oh, and don't forget to make a fool of yourself. Nothing more important to our reputation than a Freemason making a fool of himself. Oh. No, it tarnishes the reputation of the entire order. It's hard to joke about it, isn't it? So when you mention Blackfriars Bridge or a goat or Morgan, the Masonic Party, hard to be callous about it when you think of it that way. Now remember, there were other paths. Masonry developed not from one particular path, but of some remarkable ideas. Here's an example in our talk on symbolism today. This takes us back when English Masonry was essentially Christian in religious outlook. It isn't anymore, but it was once upon a time. The first chapter of St. John's Gospel was considered to be a suitable place for the Bible to be open, partly because of its reference to light. With these biblical references before them, the Masons of those times no doubt also thought of the experience of the apostles at Pentecost, recorded in the first four verses of Acts of the Apostles, chapter 2. And then there appeared unto them cloven tongues like as fire, and it sat upon each of them. And they were all filled with the Holy Ghost and began to speak with other tongues as the Spirit gave them utterance. Boy, can we have a good time talking about that one. It would be useful if it was serious. This was an experience which gave an immediate transformation and was symbolized by the physical appearance of sources of light. But it was not intended that the restoration of the candidate to light, even in a ceremonial manner, was meant to symbolize his immediate transformation merely by taking an oath of secrecy. Of course not. No, he was restored to general light in the same way as the man entering a lighted room. And the light here, first of all, was a symbol of opportunity. The candidate was made aware of the light of Masonry and now has the opportunity to discover what it has to offer. So I walk into the Steinway's sales floor in New York. I am not Chopin. And the first things that he is invited to discover are specific sources of light, the three great lights. Oh, well, let's be fair to the fellow. We need to give out some context for this. The brethren of the 18th century were divided in their views as to what were the three great lights. Those of the original Grand Lodge of 1717 believed them to be three sources of light situated in the east, south, and west. The Wilkinson manuscript, provisionally dated around 1727, is the earliest to call these the three great lights in as many words, although In many of the manuscripts dated well before this and back into the previous century, there is reference to the lights of the lodge in something like this sense. Pritchard's well-known Masonry Dissected of 1730 has reference to three great windows of lights in these three directions, and for good measure refers also to three candles. All these references are from material well before the time when any consideration could have been given to the formation of the Ancients Grand Lodge in 1751. And so it is reasonable to say that the symbolism of three great lights in Masonry, so far as the moderns or original Great Lodge was concerned, referred to sources of light in the east, south, and west. These were variously to represent the sun at its different points through its apparent daily travel when it gave light to enable Masons to work, and the sun, moon, and master of the lodge as separate sources of light. It was the purpose of the sun and moon, that these two grand luminaries of nature and gifts of God, to provide physical light at their due season to enable the speculative Mason to study his lodge and his craft. Even in darkness, the lodge and craft were still there, but it required this God-given light to enable physical awareness of their existence. Even if seen, they would not be fully understood without their moral tendencies and teachings being pointed out and explained. For this purpose, the master was the essential source of light. It was he who employed and instructed his brethren in Masonry. It really was his peculiar province to communicate light and instruction to the brethren of his lodge, and it was quite fair to compare him in this relation with all those great physical luminaries. In the development of the practices of the Ancients Grand Lodge in the second half of the 18th century, and possibly with some Irish influence, these three great luminaries, the sun, the moon, and master, had become lesser lights, and the great lights of ancient Masonry were the Bible, square, and compasses. Not physical sources at all, but emblematical, spiritual, and symbolical sources of light or inspiration in the conduct of life by pointing out together the duty of man and especially the speculative Mason to God, to his neighbor, and to himself. It was by the help of those other lights, again, that masters were able to see and obtain instruction in this concentrated field of study, which contained within the symbolic meaning of the three great, though emblematical lights, everything of Masonry and of life. When the amalgamation of the two grand lodges came in 1813, and a revision to produce a common ritual was required, it will be seen that the revised ritual form followed the symbolism of the former Ancients Grand Lodge in this particular feature. It is interesting to note that in the revision of the lecture forms after the Union of Grand Lodges, that which was proved the most acceptable and has survived still contains some of the basis of the old moderns pattern by referring to the volume of the sacred law, square, and compasses, not as the three great lights, but as the essential furniture of the lodge. Little Billie Holiday, Blue Moon.
Blue Moon, you saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Blue Moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for. And then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms really ever. a hole. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. The moon. Now I'm no longer alone. Without a dream in my heart. Without love of my own.
Better than that, does it? Not a bit. Not a bit. Well, we're coming to the end of the show again. It's always the hard part. It's always the hard part. Today's a special day. It's the sixth day of 2019. It's the day of the Epiphany. The Magi. The wizards. Yeah, wizards. The Greek translation has been revisited, as history often is. Wise men, but they had an element of magic about them. So they're more accurately referred to as wizards. Yeah, there was magic back in the day. It's also the day of the birth date of Elvis. And Stephen Hawking in 1942. Odd, eh? It was the day that, same day that Galileo died. He's the Italian astronomer and physicist, the father of observational method. Sort of interesting coincidence. He championed heliocentrism. You know, we don't want to have that. We don't want to be, you know, thinking about the world moving around that sun. It's really everything is moving around the world. The collision, in a way, the challenge to a dogma, to an ideology that refuted science. History teaches us lessons only if we choose to accept them very broadly. Balance. It's not a panacea, certainly not. But we are Masons, and we do stand for something and stand with each other, and there is a bond. So when we are acting or when we are talking and speaking with people who are not Masons, let's do it with a bit of, let's treat the order gently, a bit of respect, because we're doing things that create and affect the reputation of all of us. And that's important, that we protect and preserve our own interests. And so for the fellows that I've heard more recently saying that when they do something, they don't care how it sounds, or I think, oh my goodness, they don't care. What are you doing putting on an apron? They misspeak continuously because they haven't had a chance to, they haven't learned the lesson of reflection. Let me wrap this up with a little Jesse van der Woer. He's a Dutch jazz guitarist. Some claim he's one of the foremost jazz guitarists of our time. Here, you have a listen and decide for yourself. Thank you for joining us. I look forward to seeing you again, being with you again. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Check this out. Thank you.
comme un tel jour. Cet air n'est pas né d'aujourd'hui. Il vient d'aussi loin que je viens. Ce n'est pas sans musicien. Un jour, cet air me rendra folle. Parfois, j'ai voulu dire pourquoi. Mais il m'a coupé la parole. Il parle toujours avant moi. Et sa voix ouvre ma voix. Ah, 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 ah. Il arrive en courant derrière moi. Il me fait le coup du souviens-toi. Alam, alam, alam. C'est un rêve qui me montre les doigts. Et je fais dans ce coin que du gros des rêves. Cette air qui fait tout par cœur. Rappelle-toi tes amours. Rappelle-toi puisque c'est ton tour. Il n'y a pas de raison que tu ne pleures pas. Avec tes souvenirs sur les bras. Et moi, je vois ce qui reste. Mes vingt-ans sont battre dans le monde. Je vois sans combattre les gestes. Toute la comédie des amours. Sur les terres, il va toujours. Alain, Alain, Alain. Si je t'aime, c'est qu'à t'oublier. Alain, Alain. Thank you.